Alliances shift in Syria. President Trump's former top Russia advisor testifies on Capitol Hill. And healthcare giant Johnson & Johnson faces growing legal challenges.
There are estimates from analysts that the stock price has declined significantly this year, at least relative to the broader market. And analysts think that a lot of that is because of concern about how much J&J is going to have to pay out ultimately to resolve all this.
It's Monday, October 14th. This is the PM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. President Trump says the U.S. will raise tariffs on steel imports from Turkey back up to 50%. He also says he'll issue an executive order authorizing potential sanctions against Turkish government officials. The move follows Turkey's offensive into northern Syria last week to seize land held by the Kurds after the U.S. began withdrawing troops. Trump says Turkey's offensive, quote, is endangering civilians and threatening peace, security, and stability in the region. The president has faced backlash for rejecting warnings that withdrawing U.S. troops would lead to war in the region. Meanwhile, alliances are changing in Syria after Kurdish forces struck an agreement late Sunday with the Syrian government to join forces against Turkey's offensive into the country. The Wall Street Journal's Raja Abdurrahim explains.
The U.S. withdrawal from Syria essentially put the Kurds in a position where they felt they had really no other choice but to reach an agreement with the Syrian government. To be clear, the Kurdish forces have had not as antagonistic a relationship with the Syrian government as, say, the rebels. They've never actually been at war with them. So it's easier for them to reach some kind of agreement. And then when faced with the choice between the Turkey incursion or the regime, they very quickly opted for the regime to come in and move into these areas as a sort of protector.
That's clearing the way for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to regain power in that region.
It was already emerging as the sort of the victor from the Syrian civil war between the regime and the anti-government rebels. But now basically the government is in a position to retake most of the country. If essentially the U.S. continues to pull out of all these areas that it now has a presence in, and the regime comes in and fills that vacuum.
Human Rights Watch estimates that hundreds of thousands of people have been killed since Syria's civil war began 8 years ago. The conflict has displaced more than 5 million people, according to the United Nations. The UN says Turkey's recent incursion had displaced 130,000 people by Sunday. President Trump's former top Russia adviser Fiona Hill faced questions from lawmakers today as part of the House impeachment inquiry into the president. Hill previously served on the National Security Council and left the administration in August. She was expected to be asked about her knowledge of efforts by the president and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, to press Ukraine to investigate Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden and his son, as well as how those efforts intersected with the work of the National Security Council and the U.S. State Department. For the latest developments on this story, please check back on our website at WSJ.com or the WSJ app. Barney's may have a new buyer. Authentic Brands, the owner of about 50 brands, including Nine West and Aeropostale, is preparing a nearly $270 million bid for the luxury retailer, according to sources who spoke with the Wall Street Journal. This comes after another group's offer fell apart. Barney's filed for bankruptcy in August and had gotten an extension until Tuesday of this week to nail down an offer. Under the new deal, Authentic Brands would license the Barney's name to Saks Fifth Avenue, which is considering opening Barney's departments in some of its stores and taking over the website. New research finds that China is using a popular smartphone app and translation service to harness user data and push political messages. As our Philip Nguyen explains, the research shows China is expanding its data collection efforts by tapping into seemingly innocuous technologies.
The first research report relates to a popular Chinese app called Xueqi Qiangguo, or Study the Great Nation, which is really a propaganda app that pushes Xi Jinping quotes and Communist Party ideology to its more than 100 million registered users. Now, the research found that the code found in the app provides so-called super user access to smartphones, which potentially includes ability to modify the files and install software that logs keystrokes. While we already know China's at the forefront of 5G and surveillance tech, what this new research tells us is that China's looking beyond that and broadening its mass data collection efforts to technologies that appear more benign.
The report found that the amount of data gathered by the app isn't unusual for commercial apps, but it was developed by China's Communist Party, which could give the party a backdoor to log users' locations, calls, and contact lists. Healthcare company Johnson & Johnson is facing more than 100,000 lawsuits over product safety and marketing, and choosing to fight many of them out in court. Among others, the company is battling lawsuits over its alleged role in the opioid crisis, as well as the use of talc in its baby powder. Our Peter Loftus has more details on whether the strategy is working out for the company, and he joins me now via Skype from Philadelphia. Peter, what can you tell us about Johnson & Johnson's strategy here? We've seen several companies settle, especially when it comes to lawsuits over the opioid crisis.
Right. Well, first of all, they're facing a massive amount of litigation. They had more than 100,000 plaintiffs with cases pending against them as of the middle of this year, and that was compared with fewer than 10,000 back in 2011. And so they've taken the strategy that for a good portion of it, they're defending themselves in court and letting cases go to trial. And their strategy is that they don't want to reach settlements at a point that they consider too early in the process, because they think that would just sort of fan the flames and maybe contribute to more litigation. And so for a portion of this, they're taking, you know, a number of these cases to trial.
And Peter, we've seen a couple of these cases that have high price tags against Johnson & Johnson, but they haven't lost all of the cases they've taken to trial here.
Right. Well, it's been a mixed record. In the opioid litigation, there's really just been one significant trial so far, and that was in Oklahoma. Trial was held earlier in the year. The judge's decision was in August, and that's where the judge decided that J&J should pay $572 million for allegedly contributing to the state's opioid addiction crisis. And that's a verdict that J&J is contesting and plans to appeal. And what's notable about that is that two other companies, Purdue and Teva, which were defendants in this lawsuit because they also sold opioids, they had reached settlements before that case even got to trial. So they weren't on trial. So it left J&J as the one company on trial, and they lost. And then with the baby powder, with talc, there have been a number of losses for J&J. There was a big one last year where they were ordered to pay $4.7 billion over the claims that the use of talc caused ovarian cancer in 22 women. Again, J&J is contesting that. But J&J has won a number of talc cases. So just last week, there were two in California where the jury basically sided with J&J and did not accept the plaintiff's allegations that the use of talc caused ovarian cancer and that J&J was responsible for that.
It does sound like Johnson & Johnson is potentially on the hook for a lot of money here. We're talking verdicts that have been reached in the millions and also the billions. Is there any sense that J&J could change its strategy here? Experts you spoke to say that it is somewhat of a risky one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are people who feel that, you know, maybe they're being too aggressive for their own good, and that, you know, when they decide to defend themselves in court at trial, they really run the risk of these big, you know, sometimes eye-popping verdicts, like the verdict last week in Philadelphia, where a jury said that J&J should pay $8 billion to a man because of a side effect of their antipsychotic Risperdal. And so I do think there are people who think maybe this is too aggressive, but I think, I think J&J feels like they have to be aggressive in certain areas. And I don't think it's universal for all their litigation, but I think for parts of it, they feel like they have to be aggressive and defend themselves.
Has all this litigation and fighting it in court taken any noticeable effects on the company's business?
Well, as far as effects on the company's business, I don't know if there's direct evidence that it's hurt sales or significantly hurt profits. I mean, J&J has set aside money periodically each quarter for expected future settlements for various pieces of this litigation. So obviously that affects the bottom line. There are estimates from analysts that the stock price has declined significantly this year, at least relative to the broader market. And analysts think that a lot of that is because of concern about how much J&J is going to have to pay out ultimately to resolve all this. And that, and those figures, you know, are in the billions, even the tens of billions. I think for opioids alone, I saw one analyst estimate that it could take $5 to $10 billion for J&J to settle that. And that's just one piece of all their litigation.
That's the Wall Street Journal's Peter Loftus joining me via Skype from Philadelphia. Thank you so much, Peter.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.